Dear viewers, we would like to welcome you to a new episode in the program, Questions About Faith. It is my pleasure to be the host of this program, Mohammed Saeed, and to accompany you in the following episodes with our most honorable guest, Priest Zakaria Botros. You are most welcome, Father.
Thank you.
Dear viewers, before beginning, I would like to introduce myself to you. I grew up in a Muslim family, learned Islam, and studied in Islamic schools in an Arab country. Ever since I was a little child, my mother instilled in my mind one of the most important things, which is to love God. Even as a child, I had such yearning and passion for God Most High. I had such a strong desire to please God, to obey Him, and to be in the center of His will. And as an adult, I traveled to many countries. As I was growing up, I tried as much as I could to practice all of the Muslim teachings, such as prayer and fasting. During my travels, I journeyed to Saudi Arabia, as I had such an interest to visit Mecca and Al-Kaaba, where I prayed and where I also sought God's face. Later in life, I met a Christian friend who began to tell me about Christ as well as telling me about salvation in addition to condemnation and sin. All these things were new to me. I had not thought about them before. This friend started to share with me some things from the Bible, the Holy Injil. I'm going to read now some of the most impressive verses that touched my heart. They are in the 5th chapter of the Gospel according to Matthew, where Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you, and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." And I was touched by the words, "to be called the sons of God." This started me to think, can I ever be a son of God? I had always thought of myself as God's slave. I had always thought of God as the sovereign, the holy, the powerful, the compeller, the magnificent, the mercy giving, the merciful. But this man started to tell me that God is love, or rather that God is the love. After 3 years of dialogue and searching that involved a lot of difficult and hard times, I truly came, my dear viewers, to seek the truth, God Himself. I said to God, "Lord, You are the truth, and I want to know You." God Himself dealt with me through His Spirit, and I came to acknowledge the truth that I am a sinful man, and that a sinful man cannot stand in God's presence, because God is absolutely holy, and we, His creation, are by nature sinful. Therefore, we are spiritually dead and separated from God on account of our sinfulness. I asked God, "How can I be reconciled to You?" And the answer came to me, only through Christ. This might be difficult for you to ask. It was difficult for me. But Christ says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." He also said, "If you believe with your heart and confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord, you will be saved." Dear friends, All these words were difficult for me as a Muslim. I continually prayed to God. I would kneel down and bow down on my knees and ask Him to help me understand and ask for salvation as well. I searched for my salvation from sin and condemnation. I had a holy desire for my name to be written in the Book of Life. I came to know the person of Jesus Christ. I received Him as a personal Savior of my life. And I believe now, my dear brothers, that my name is written in the Book of Life. It is our heartfelt desire and our prayer that these programs will convey to you biblical truth. Now, we welcome you, Reverend. In the previous episode of the program, you had discussed the issue of abrogation in the Quran, and this issue aroused a lot of interest to the point that some newspapers started to write about it. But what was said on the topic was brief and short, and it aroused the curiosity in people to know more. Do you have more to say about this serious topic in order to satisfy the interest of the viewers? We have received many questions. One of these questions is, as you talked about the abrogating and abrogated verses in the Quran before, would you please summarize what you said so that the viewers may remember what has been said before we go on to know more?
Thank you very much. Truly, the program has had an impact on the public opinion. I received many letters through the internet and through the newspapers, and through the magazines. For example, this magazine called Al Asbu'a, The Week, on the 19th of January, 2002, on page 2. Oh, excuse me, 2004. In an article on the second page, the editor says, he first mentions the name of the guest in this program, which was myself, and that the topic was the abrogating and the abrogated verses. In his comment, he says, this topic is difficult and complicated, and many of Islamic legalese scholars avoided. Therefore, I made up my mind to follow the program completely. I was rather attracted by the idea that a priest tackled this issue. The viewers would like to know so many things, because God created man with a mind. This is the characteristic that marks man from other unintelligent animals. Man must use his mind. Man would like to know and understand. He wants to reach the truth, but there is no one to talk about the truth. Exactly as the editor said, that Muslim scholars avoid talking about such difficult topics. I wish that our beloved Muslim scholars would have filled the gap for others. But I thank the Lord for Al Hayat TV, which gives us the chance to talk about such subjects. When I am talking about this subject, I'm not talking out of curiosity. It is rather an essential part of religious dialogue.
Why do we talk about abrogation?
As a matter of fact, in the previous episodes, we tackled the issue of abrogation because it had to do with a question about contradictions or discrepancies in the Bible. The inquirer put the question. As this is a program about questions about the faith, he has all the freedom to ask. The inquirer said, the Bible has contradictions, and we are only trying to answer him. The Bible, we know very well, has no contradictions. It may appear that there are contradictions, but when one studies the verses in context, each one in turn, contradiction just disappears. For example, someone said, there is this event of transfiguration. In one gospel it says that it took place after 6 days, and at another place it says that it happened after 8 days. And they say this is an obvious contradiction. Did they take place after 6 or after 8 days? But when we analyze it properly, we find that in the first instance, the writer did not count the day on which Jesus made the statement. Neither did he count the day of transfiguration itself. So there were 6 days left in between. The other evangelist counted the day on which Jesus was transfigured and the day on which the statement was made, and this made 8 days total. These are all apparent contradictions, but in depth, study would show us what originally happened. And by the same token, we received questions about the contradictions in the Quran, and these contradictions were given the name of abrogated and abrogating questions. Therefore, I had to study the subject.
What does the word nasq, abrogation, mean?
As a matter of fact, nasq, abrogation, has two meanings, a lingual meaning and a technical meaning. Lingually, it means to cancel out and abolish. There is another meaning, which is to copy. For example, to copy a book. As to that technical meaning, however, this has been the field of study of many Muslim scholars. And in this respect, I only tell what they said. I don't give myself the right to give legal opinion or fatwa. So let me tell you what Ibn Kathir said. And quoting Ibn Jarir, Ibn Kathir says in his commentary, volume 1, page 104, commenting on the verse that says, we do not cancel any verse, nor let it be forgotten, etc., etc. He says to cancel means to turn that which is legal into that which is illegal, and that which is illegal into that which is legal, to make the admissible inadmissible, and the inadmissible admissible. In Al-Nasafi's commentary on this same verse, volume 1, page 116, he says, nasq, abrogation, is the alteration and the termination of the legal effect.
But the Quran says in Surah 13, Al-Ra'd, verse 39, God erases whatever he wishes. What do you have to say about that?
Well, the Quran adds here another meaning to abrogation, which is erasing. And there are so many verses in the Quran that have to do with abrogation and canceling. So God abrogates, meaning cancels, or he erases, which means he removes completely. So it carries several meanings, as commentators have said.
What's the importance of the topic of abrogation regarding the Quran?
It is a rather serious issue. We can only say what the scholars or jurisprudents came up with. I read many books about it, such as the abrogating and the abrogated verses in the Quran, by Hebatullah ibn Salama ibn Nasr ibn Ali al-Baghdadi. Died in the year 410 after Hegra. Also, abrogation in the Holy Quran by Abu Ghafar al-Nahas. There are several books, not to mention the Islamic websites. These books explain the importance of abrogation. They claim that the Quran cannot be understood unless one already understands about abrogation. So, for example, if someone finds a certain legal judgment in the Quran, but this legal judgment has been canceled or abrogated, he will end up interpreting the old abrogated judgment not knowing that it has been canceled, and this will lead to confusion. And such an incident actually took place with Ali ibn Abi Talib. It is told about Ali ibn Abi Talib that he went to a mosque in Kufa and found a man encircled by many people. His name was Abdul Rahman ibn Dab. He was a friend of Musa al-Ash'ari. That is, he was a well-known person. He heard the guy giving legal opinions, fatwas. He listened to him, and he didn't like what he had to say. He asked him, did you know about abrogation? The man answered, no. So Ali said to him, you perish, and you cause others to perish. He took hold of his ear and rubbed it hard, took him outside the mosque, told him, I don't want to see you here anymore. Why? Because he was leading people to perish. So we conclude from this story that we have to know about abrogation in order to know which are the valid judgments.
Yes. This piece of information you mentioned is written in the book called El Nasikh Wal Mansukh by Hebatullah Helbodadi, page 12. And the viewers could check it out for themselves. Thank you. Another question. Where does the idea of abrogation in the Quran come from?
This is a very serious and important question. Because in the Quran there are several verses that openly say that abrogation took place in some verses. And the most famous verse in this respect is the one in Surah 2, Al-Baqarah, verse 106, where it says, we do not cancel any verse or let it be forgotten. Instead, we bring something better than it or something similar. There is another verse as well in Surah 16, Al-Nahl, verse 101, where it says, whenever we replace a verse by another verse, and God is aware of what He sends down, they say you are merely an impostor. Indeed, most of them do not know anything. So there is replacement. There is a verse in Surah 13, Al-Ra'd, which you just said, verse 39. God erases and consolidates whatever He wishes. He retains the mother of the book. And in Surah Al-Fath, Surah 22, verse 52, it says that God will cancel out whatever Satan tampers with. There are certainly other verses, but these are the most prominent ones that speak about the abrogating and the abrogated verses in the Quran.
I personally am confronted with a question that occurs to a Muslim's mind, that God, as it says in Surah Al-Nahl, verse 101, that God is aware of what He sends down, and we know that God is all-powerful. What do you have to say about this comment?
Very good. God is all-powerful. He does whatever He wishes. Yet God respects the intellect of the man He created. He will not do anything that goes contrary to the intellect. He may do something that goes beyond the intellect, but he can never go against the intellect. And at the same time, he makes it available to me to understand what it means, the wisdom behind this. So as a human being, God endowed me with the intellect, and I have to use it to understand. I am supposed to study. So it is true, God is free to do whatever He wishes, but that must not be in conflict with the intellect and reason. It must be something that we can comprehend and understand and know the reasons behind it.
Yes, another question here. What is meant by to let it be forgotten?
It means God made the messenger forget it. The verse says, we do not cancel any verse or let it be forgotten. Then there are several traditions about Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, to the effect that he forgot many verses. In Sahih al-Bukhari, Hadith, tradition number 5092, quoting several other people that go back to Aisha, she said, the messenger of God, may God pray upon him, heard a man reciting a surah by night. He said, may God show mercy to him. He has reminded me of such and such a thing, a verse I was made to forget from such and such surah. Was made to forget it. The passive voice here refers to God in the Sahih by Muslim.
But this is only natural. The Prophet of Islam himself said, I am only a mere human, just as you are.
May I make a remark here?
Yes.
I want to emphasize that Muhammad did not merely forget, but rather was made to forget it. As the Quran puts it, it is a transitive verb in Arabic. God made him forget it. Muhammad did not forget it. So he was made to forget it. I want to make this clear.
Yes, that's right.
And this is, as a matter of fact, the crux of the question.
The question poses itself then, would God make someone forget the verses that He had revealed to him?
Not just a man, a prophet. How come then that God says, we sent down the reminder and we will preserve it? Mr. Muhammad, these are many, many topics that are put forward. We would like our beloved Muslim scholars, those who are experts in this field, to appear on the screen on any satellite channel and try to answer those gaps in the minds of the people. People want to know, why did God give him these verses if he wanted to make him forget them afterward? As a reader, I have to ask this question, not protesting or objecting or contesting, but God gave me this mind, and this mind makes me inquire. In Islamic books, as you can see, are quite spread on the market, and we study them in order to understand. But I really hope that some of the scholars of Al-Azhar would be interested, who would appear on the screen and tell us, well, folks, this is what is right and this is what is wrong, just to explain what the whole thing is about. For example, in tradition, in the Sahih of Muslim, number 1874, quoting Aisha as well, she says, the Prophet was listening to the recitation of a man in the mosque. He said, may God show mercy to him, he reminded me of a verse which I was made to forget. This has been also mentioned by Ibn Kathir in his commentary, volume 1, page 104. He says, quoting Ibn Garir, that the Prophet recited a part of the Quran, then he was made to forget it.
He was made to forget it, not he forgot it.
Ibn Abbas made this mistake and said forgot instead of made to forget. He said in one instance, revelation would be sent down to the Prophet by night and he would forget it by day. But this is a mistake here. He did not forget it. He was made to forget it. That is by God. And here is the seriousness of the question. If God makes him forget it, why had he given it to him to start with? An intelligent and thinking person must ask this question, and he has all the right to be answered. Do you know, Mr. Muhammad, what the problem is? It is simply that people have taken things for granted. Thus says God, and thus said the Prophet. Well, but why did God give us an intellect? To think, of course. So the issue is simply to think and to inquire, so that the honorable Muslim scholars would answer in such a way that would satisfy the minds of their own co-religionists.
Now we come to the question of why would God give or reveal this verse to start with, and then afterward cause them to be forgotten? And if the Prophet can forget, so what about the Quran?
That's right. If the Prophet himself could forget, what about those who memorized the Quran before it was written down? Maybe God would have caused them to forget also.
Another question related to it, what is meant by the Quranic expression, better than it?
This is a truly good question. This is one of the questions that pose themselves in one's mind. Let me ask a question without contesting the validity or anything. If there is a verse that is better than another verse, would that mean that in God's words there are good words and better words?
Yes. I think you are pointing to Surah 2, Al-Baqarah, verse 106, where it says, we do not cancel any verse nor let it be forgotten. Instead, we bring something that is better than it, or else something similar, and namely that God is able to reveal a better verse than the one preceding it.
Does God have good words and better words? If he has good words and better ones, then he has, God forbid, bad words?
Got your point. So he should have, from the start, revealed the best. In this case, is there a comparison in God's revelation?
Yes, of course. If we take it this way, it will mean that there is a comparison. If we use better, which is comparison, then we are talking about comparison. There is a more serious issue. Not just that there are better words, but that there are similar words. Why wouldn't God remind him of the exact same verse, not something similar to it? All these are questions that just arise in people's minds. What's the advantage of revealing a similar verse? Why wouldn't God reveal the exact verse?
Then what are the exact words that were written in the preserved tablet?
Well, now the issue gets even messier. What about the preserved tablet? What about him being caused to forget? What about God giving better verses? Well, what about the words in the preserved tablet? Are they the good ones or the better ones? Or the verses that were completely erased or made to be forgotten? It's a real mess.
Right. Do Muslims believe that there is abrogation within the Quran?
To be honest, this is an important question. And out of my readings, I'll tell you the opinions of the Muslim scholars of jurisprudence. For example, Ibn Kathir, in his commentary, Volume 1, page 105, he says, all Muslims agree that it is permissible to abrogate God's judgments. And all of them held that it took place, so it happened. Al-Imam al-Nasafi as well, in his commentary, in Volume 1, page 116, says, it is permissible to abrogate parts of the Quran and the Sunnah, the traditions of Muhammad, whether by agreement or disagreement, such as by addition to the text, and causing to forget, which means the memory of the verse would vanish from the minds. And also, in the Islamic Encyclopedia, Volume 3, page 9900, it says, abrogation from God is a consciously applied process, planned in advance, and intended to be applied to the content of revelation. In Al-Azhar website, which is a very important reference, Professor Dr. Abdel Fattah Mahmoud Idris wrote an article on the abrogation. The majority of experts of jurisprudence and fundamentals agree to the fact that abrogation is permissible logically and legally. Also in the book Al-Nasikh and Al-Mansukh in the Quran by Abu Ghafar Al-Nahas, page 6. There is a very nice part which I'd like to refer to. Abrogation in the Holy Quran is an accomplished fact called for by the necessity of legislation. Hence we come to realize that abrogation did take place in the Quran. In the same book, Al-Nasikh wal-Mansukh in the Holy Quran, on page 7, the author says, in this introduction, we must point to the matter of denial of abrogation in the Holy Quran, which is a very old issue put forward by Abu Muslim al-Asfahani.
We thank you very much, Reverend. Our time is over. There are many questions that arise, dear viewers. Do you believe in abrogation? Do you believe that God replaces a verse by another? Would God erase a verse and follow it up with another one? Does God change his mind? We welcome all of your questions. And if you like to receive a free copy of the Bible, you will see in front of you on the screen our addresses. You can contact us through the internet or through the mail. We welcome all of your questions and thank you very much, and see you again in the next episode.
Thank you.